All right, good morning. I'm Todd Siemens. I'm the director of the genetics lab at DFW, and I'm going to talk to you, obviously, about winter steelhead genetics in the Chehalis River, the most recent analysis that we did. Before we go too far, I actually want to make some acknowledgments of field crews, folks like Amy, we've already heard from, and Nick, who are out there collecting samples for us these past couple of years. Todd Kastler works in our lab. He manages our contracts. Sherelle Bowman did actually most of the genetic work in the lab. Thank goodness it was not me. U.S. Fish Wildlife Service, the Abernathy Tech Center, actually allowed us to use some of their steelhead samples as part of the baseline that we're comparing the Chehalis to, and also the Quinault Nation. Sorry for the tribe there. Quinault Nation also has paid for collected samples and paid for genotyping those, and have allowed us to incorporate those into our baseline, so I use some of those for comparison here as well. And then the two funding sources there that help pay for this work. So what you're going to see here is sort of a reduced representation of the published report, which is available online at the DFW website. So there's sort of a lot going on in the report. I'm not going to show you everything. It's too much to show you in 15 minutes. So I'm going to present one specific marker set and some analysis methods and present the main findings. The figures that you're going to see are taken directly from the report, and they're labeled as such here. So the motivation for this study is that understanding the population structure is critical for the planning and habitat modeling that's going on in the Chehalis Basin. And the previous genetic analysis, of which there are some in the Chehalis Basin, they were using low power markers. They're actually quite old, during the Alazine days, which is ancient history as far as genetics is concerned. 1980s, that's ancient history. Incomplete sampling in space, which we've filled in a lot of that space with modern samples, and no temporal replication, so which is pretty important if you're establishing a baseline. You need to make sure that the genetic signals that you see are stable throughout time. So our objectives were to determine the genetic relationship of Chehalis winter steelhead with other Oncorhynchus micus in Washington State, and to reveal the population genetic structure of Oncorhynchus micus within the Chehalis River Basin. So we have actually a pretty rich data set that we can compare Chehalis to. We have the genetic resources of micus in Washington. We have three main genetic lineages of micus in the state. Two are native. On the west side of the Cascade Range, we have coastal lineage Oncorhynchus micus. That includes winter and summer run steelhead. They're both part of the same genetic lineage. On the interior, the east side of the Cascade Range, we have the interior red band lineage, and that's actually a separate subspecies. And they're genetically quite different. We have representative populations from all over on both sides of the Cascade Range. We also have a third genetic lineage. Those are non-native hatchery trout that DFW and other folks produce in the state, that DFW has planted throughout the state. And we have three strains of those, which I have also genetic samples from. Then we can compare all that to the Chehalis Basin. So that includes, as I said, the non-native California hatchery rainbow trout, three strains. We have two lineages of the natives. We have in our baseline, we have hatchery broodstocks. So that'd be our segregated hatchery broodstocks, for example, the Chambers Creek broodstocks, which are native broodstock. Coastal lineage, we have our wild anadromous and resident populations in our baseline that we can use, and native rainbow trout isolated upstream of some barriers. There are a lot of those populations. We don't have as many of those sampled as I would like, but we still have some of those. And as far as the genetics are concerned, the data that I have, we have old microsatellite data for a lot of these. I didn't use any of that. This is all using SNP markers, modern panels, either 189 SNPs or a much larger panel, almost 270 SNPs, both of which were used to analyze the Chehalis data, but I'm only going to present the 189 SNP data set due to sample size issues for the two different SNP markers. But the story is the same regardless of which SNP panel you use. And actually, the 189 are a subset of the 270 markers. And that panel also includes three loci that allow us to identify Clarke and Micus Clarke hybrids, which if we found any of those, they were removed from analysis. So jumping into the sampling here. So here's the map of the Chehalis. We have genetic samples from the Hum-Tulips River, the Wishkah, the Winooch, Satsop, Skookumchuck, New Waukam, the South Fork Chehalis, and the Upper Chehalis. And where you see the times two, those are where we had samples in two different years, temporal replication. So really only the Wishkah, South Fork Chehalis, and New Waukam River, we did not have that temporal replication. I believe this really pretty much encompasses the majority of where steelhead spawn. The Cloquelam River or Creek, I know, also has a lot of spawning steelhead. That's actually someplace that I would like to include in future analyses, but I think this pretty much incorporates the majority of the spawning steelhead in the Chehalis Basin. I'd also mention at this point that we sampled, or I wish it was me, the field crews sampled only unmarked fish. So these are all wild fish, adipose intact fish. And in the South Fork Chehalis, and I think that's mainly where, when we couldn't get adult fish, these are all adult fish sampled on spawning grounds, except for the South Fork Chehalis, which includes juvenile fish, which we use when we can't get the adult fish. So those were electrofished, but naturally produced, also unmarked. So here's jumping into some results. What you're seeing here is there's two kinds of analyses I can do. One is individual analyses, where you let the genetic information of each individual speak for itself, regardless of the collection status, where it was collected or who it was collected with. This is a PCA analysis. It's axis one and axis two of a PCA analysis, principal components analysis, where I let the genetics speak for themselves. I've compared here Chehalis Basin to our much broader baseline data of the hatchery rainbow trout, the inland red band rainbow trout, and steelhead, and the coastal lineage. And you can see they're really quite different. So here we have the California hatchery trout. They all cluster together, so I haven't told PCA who these fish are. The genetics are speaking for themselves. All the hatchery trout from two different strains here cluster together. Our inland red band rainbows cluster together, and all the coastal lineage fish, including the Chehalis, which are the blue dots, cluster together, except for you can see three, and there's actually a fourth sort of buried in there, Chehalis fish, which were hatchery rainbow trout. And in fact, if you go back to the biological data that the field guys collected as they were collecting these fish, though they suspected that those four fish were escape hatchery rainbow trout as well, and so those four fish got kicked out of the data set from this point on. So you can see the Chehalis fish, as they should, belong to that coastal lineage. So now I'm doing the same kind of analysis, principal components, looking just within the Chehalis Basin, not just within, but I've reduced the data set. I'm not comparing it to the California hatchery trout. I'm not comparing it to the inland red bands. It's just to other coastal lineage populations from the lower Columbia. These are actually the samples that I included here are from our Skamania steelhead programs, which are lower Columbia coastal lineage, Southwest Washington, Abernathy, those Abernathy Creek samples, plus some Willapa River samples, the Olympic Peninsula. These are the samples that the Quinault Nation has allowed us to use in the baseline. Puget Sound samples, Chehalis are the blue triangles, and then our Olympic Peninsula early winter program, the Cook Creek collection, is also in here. And what you can see is that there is some clustering. The lower Columbia fish are somewhat separate from the Puget Sound, the Olympic Peninsula in the yellow, and the Chehalis in the blue, and Southwest Washington. But there's quite a bit of overlap with the Chehalis and the Olympic Peninsula, and less so with the Puget Sound. So if we look at it a different way, this is again an individual analysis, but instead of principal components, we're using a program called Structure, which creates, you tell it how many clusters to look for, and it uses a population genetic model to do the clustering. And what you can see is, when I tell it to use five clusters versus 10, these were the two that were statistically supported best among the cluster numbers. If you look at K equals five across the top here, you have Puget Sound on the right. each cluster is given a different color. Each individual is a bar on this plot, and you can have membership to more than one proportional membership, more than one cluster. You can see that the Puget Sound is sort of this yellow cluster, and they are a pretty solid cluster using this analysis. The Lower Columbia summer steelhead are also a solid cluster, as are actually the Skookumchuck samples. Really solid cluster and really solid membership to those clusters. You can see the Olympic Peninsula, sort of a lot of orange and red, as well as the Southwest Washington and the lower Chehalis River tributaries, Grace Harbor tributaries, with maybe a little bit different, more red in the Satsopwanuchi and in the upper Chehalis and the South Fork Chehalis. When you increase the K equals 10, what happens is the Puget Sound, mostly what happens is the Puget Sound samples that I've included start to break out into sort of Nooksack Deer Creek and Snow Creek and some of these others. The Chehalis, as far as the Chehalis is concerned, the upper, the Skookumchuck is all, again, really solid cluster. The upper and South Fork Chehalis break out from the Wenatchee and Satsop, which actually start to show some differences from those Grace Harbor tributaries. So showing some structure within the basin. And again, even looking at this way, now this is by collection. Now I'm saying that the individuals actually belong to a collection, and it's treating each collection as a unit rather than an individual. This is a dendrogram generated from genetic distances, and you basically see the same pattern. In fact, I've colored the branches reflecting that K equals 5 plot from the previous plot that you saw. Here you have Puget Sound, here's your Lower Columbia. The Skookumchuck and Nuwakum again are really different. The branch lengths are indicative of how genetically different these clusters or collections are. South Fork and Upper Chehalis are on a separate branch, so they're clustering together. And your Willapaw River, the Humtulips Wishka and Satsopwanuchi sort of form two clusters that are also then clustered together here. The Olympic Peninsula are nearby, and then the Abernathy Creek are actually sort of physically and genetically on this map next to these Lower Columbia groups. So again, clustering, you can see some structure within the basin and their next nearest neighbors in space when looking at a broad spatial scale. So now if we look at just within the Chehalis Basin, this is again a structure plot. Each bar again is an individual. Three different structure cluster numbers were supported by the data. Again, the Skookumchuck and the, to some degree, Nuwakum are really separate. You have at K equals 3, the lower, the Grace Harbor tributaries start to break out from the Satsopwanuchi and upper Chehalis. At K equals 4, the upper Chehalis and South Fork Chehalis break out from these two, and you can start to see that these two are also, the Grace Harbor tributaries and Satsopwanuchi are also breaking apart from one another, more yellow here, more green here. And at K equals 6, the Wenatchee and Satsop start to break out from each other. Basically the same patterns that we're seeing in the dendrograms are showing up here in these other analyses, lending support for this population structure. And again, now with a PCA, the same samples and basically these same patterns of the upper Chehalis, the Skookumchuck here, and actually I won't include the Nuwakum because that's partly why I'm including this particular plot, Skookumchuck and the lower Grace Harbor and lower tributaries. Now the Nuwakum are these red dots. And as you can see, they actually overlap all three of those sort of lobes of this PCA plot. And I actually, this, along with the structure analysis, makes me believe that the collection we have currently from the Nuwakum does not actually represent a spawning population in the Nuwakum. There's also, I'm not going to present it, but there's also some genetic diversity statistics that we run on these collections. And what it looks to me like is we have what's called the Wallen effect, which means you have individuals from multiple populations collected in one collection. So any conclusions about Nuwakum being a separate population at this point, I wouldn't say that. The collection that we have I would say does not represent actually a spawning population. We need to look at the Nuwakum more in order to determine what that spawning population looks like genetically. Again, another dendrogram, again by collection, showing basically the same pattern. The Upper Chehalis and South Fork Chehalis clustering together. Skookumchuck. Now the Nuwakum, I left it in here, even though I don't believe it represents a spawning population. It clusters with the Skookumchuck, I think, because there's enough Skookumchuck individuals in there that it pulls that collection onto this Skookumchuck branch. The Hump Tulips and Wishkah down here clustering together, those Grace Harbor tributaries, and then the Satsopo Wenuchi. You can also see, it's important to see here that the temporal replication, the temporal replicates also cluster with each other first before clustering with the next nearest neighbor. And these numbers here are the statistical support, bootstrap support, high bootstrap support for the topology of this dendrogram. The FSTs also, again, treating these as collections and not individuals, had really high, relatively large FSTs, indicating, you know, adding further support for this structure. And again, those Skookumchucks, you could see sort of long branches, big distance, and also the FSTs were large, indicating that those Skookumchucks were sort of really out there. And what I think is going on with the Skookumchuck is what we're seeing there is this really big hatchery influence. Again, I'm not showing the diversity statistics, but the collections, and remember, these are unclipped fish, caught adults actually from the Skookumchuck, caught in the Skookumchuck, and the diversity statistics for that collection is really quite low. It's actually low for compared to any other collection in the Chehalis, but it's also quite low compared to wild coastal steelhead collections that we have in our baseline. So diversity is quite low in that wild population, and I suspect it's an integrated program in the Skookumchuck, so they're taking their broodstock from fish that nose up against the dam. I think the number of unclipped fish that are actually incorporated into broodstock is pretty low. The number of hatchery fish on the spawning grounds, I believe, is pretty high. And I just learned the other day that we recycle those fish in the Skookumchuck up to maybe 3 times. If there's somebody here in the audience who knows if that's not true, I'd be interested to know. But that's all could be contributing to this sort of hatchery, what I think is a hatchery signal in the Skookumchuck. So those main conclusions. So as expected, the Chehalis winter steelhead are coastal lineage. They cluster with their nearest neighbors in space, Olympic Peninsula and Willapa. Winter steelhead. The structures related to Chehalis geography, actually I didn't mention this, but those three clusters are based on their the mountain range that they drain. So the Olympic Peninsula, the Cascade Range, and the Willapa Hills, all those correlate with those genetic clusters. The Upper Chehalis, I'll mention now that all of those samples were collected upstream of the dam site in the Upper Chehalis. And they are distinct from other groups in the Chehalis. That there looks like a hatchery program effect in the Skookumchuck and maybe the Nuwakum. And also, I'm not convinced the Nuwakum collection represents a spawning population. And with that, thank you for your time and take any questions. Yeah.
So Todd, based on what you presented, do you think there could be reason to revisit how the Skookumchuck program is being designed and implemented? That's the first question. Second question is, did you see anything sort of anomalous in the Hump Tulips that would indicate a hatchery effect there? So if you could address both of those.
Yeah, so yes, there's probably, I mean, even without this genetic data, I think there's probably a good reason to revisit the Skookumchuck program to think about what's going on there, especially with regard perhaps to the recycling. And then with regards to the tulips, I don't recall seeing any hatchery effect, anything indicating there. So one thing I didn't mention is there are actually quite a few hatchery programs. We heard about one in the Elk Creek, so those are Skookumchuck fish transported upstream to Elk Creek and released there. It's in sort of the Upper Chehalis, but downstream of the dam site, downstream of any sampling that we did. And of course, we didn't include any unclipped fish They didn't find very many up there anyway. We didn't include any clip fish in any of the analyses. We also have those Skookumchuck fish being released in the New Waukum. I don't remember the name of the lake there.
Carlisle
Lake. Yeah, Carlisle? Carlisle Lake, that's right. And also, apparently, there are some par releases as well in the New Waukum, which might account for some of that New Waukum signal, or Skookumchuck signal in the Waukum, although there could also be common ancestry. They both drain the Cascades, and we see this geographic pattern, so that that New Waukum signal may or may not be a Skookumchuck hatchery signal. But there's also Chambers and Skamania released in sort of lower tributaries, but we didn't see really any signal of either of those programs anywhere in the basin. All right, thank you.